This morning, we're going to talk about, once again, transforming the treasure and in our relationships to one another. And we're going to start this morning by singing a hymn, and I've made some copies of it. I have done this with the permission of the owner of the copyright, by the way. I forgot to mark that at the bottom, which is a very important thing that we all do when we copy things, people, is make sure we have permission to do it. And I also want to do a little advertising with this hymn. I'll tell you some more about it in a minute. But it comes from a collection of songs called Songs for Gospel People, and which is absolutely marvelous. It's published in Canada. It was it's published by an independent publishing house, which is run by a former United Church pastor in Canada, and Woodlake Books, which is in the interior in BC. It's in Winfield, BC. And the BC Alberta Alberta Northwest Conference and British Columbia Conference, the United Church, sort of encouraged it, shall we say. But it's a wonderful collection for any of you that are looking for an alternative songbook to, of course, add to the stunning collection of hymns available to you in the Lutheran Book of Worship.
It's a good time to buy it right now. My church just bought 10 for a small choir alternative book. And since the rates right now are very good for U.S.
Did you buy them?
It's like they're like $4.50 a piece.
Yeah, see, they're real cheap too. They come in a regular paper bound edition or the spiral bound.
Yeah.
And the paper bound one is $5 Canadian.
No, it's not now. Oh, yeah.
Yes, $5 Canadian. And this one is $6 Canadian. That is a very cheap book, even if you're going to pay $5 and $6 for it. There are 134 selections in the book. We don't need to go on all the, but some draw, but there are 34 of them are duplicated in the LBW, but not totally duplicated. For example, the hymn, O 4,000 Tongues to Sing, in the Lutheran Book of Worship excludes the verse, Hear him, ye deaf, his praise, ye dumb, your loosened tongues employ. It's included in this one. We have a wonderful hymn in the Lutheran Book of Worship at the end of the hymn section called, maybe some of you know this, For the Fruit of All Creation. Do you know those wonderful words? Well, we'll sing that sometime before we get you done. It also has probably one of the, now David, you can chime in and argue with me at this point, but probably one of the best crafted new tunes in the LBW. Emma Lou Deemer, who wrote the tune, is a stunning hymn writer. Unfortunately, probably 98% of the congregations that use the Lutheran Book of Worship cannot sing that particular tune well, right? It's difficult. It's not terrible, but it's difficult. Those words go real nicely to All Through the Night, and everybody does that, right? Well, so this book has those wonderful words to All Through the Night. So you have some alternatives, is what I'm saying. Another good thing this book does is provides, it's inclusive language, provides also, the only drawback you may find in the U.S. is that many of the hymns have verses in French. Also, it's a Canadian book. Maybe that's useful in your congregation, but not totally exclusively in French. And it has sort of the best of all worlds. It has a couple old gospel favorites, like Great is Thy Faithfulness and More Love to Thee, O Christ. Okay, you all know those. It has some sort of Sunday school favorites that are really appropriate for worship, like this is the day the Lord has made, and seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all those kinds of things that we all love to sing. It also has some stunning new hymns, and it also has old tunes with new words, which is what you have in front of you here. So I'm pushing this. Did you notice that? Right. We just bought it at my parish and are really enjoying it a whole lot. It's a wonderful, wonderful book if you're looking for some supplementary things to what you have in your pews. Except you have to do things like we got the dark green book and the bright green book. We also have Songs for the People, so we've got the gold book, so it gets a little confusing. Anyway, this particular hymn, In Suffering Love, does everybody have a copy or access to one? I thought it would be good today as we talk about Galatians 6:2. There's some around. You may have to share around a bit. It was written by a United Church pastor named Rob Johns, You notice that his wife holds the copyright. He died about 2 or 3 years ago at the age of 41 of leukemia. And he wrote this hymn early on in his disease. He also wrote some other hymns as well. When I called his wife for the copyright permission, she said, I said, you charge, sometimes people charge, and she said, oh, please, just use it, you know. People, and so she's very happy when it's when it gets used. But as I remind you, I did ask for her permission. You may not know the tune, but it's one of those sort of hymny tunes that should... that should click in your brain as saying you think you know it. But please note the words. It's got a lot of mixed images and things like that. But it really does talk about the fact that both God in coming to us in suffering love and we as we share each other's burdens and tasks in the world can come up with all kinds of wonderful combinations, especially in the last verse when you know that. I think we're ready to do this now, David. Wonderful words, and what we're talking about today is sharing each other's burdens and how that transforms our relationship. That last verse is so wonderful, that the whole image of the desert blooming that's all through the prophets and the Psalms and all that, how does it happen that having people together and not just sharing tears, huh? It's the tears of grief and the tears of laughter, and part of this is laughing so hard you're crying too. And that also waters the desert so that things bloom. And we do this together. So today we'll be looking at, that's our prayer for the morning in there, that we do that kind of thing. We'll be looking at Galatians chapter 6, verses 2 through 5. For anybody that was here on, I'm losing track of my days, on Thursday, do you have any further reflections on the self and how God continues to renew us in ourselves? Do you think about that a little bit? I had some good conversations with several people afterwards about the kind of distinctions that are present there, especially maybe in terms of when we talked about some of the distinctions between God continually renewing ourselves so that that's not taken away, but then the life that we have is what we share. That's where our connections get made. And some of it, a lot of you weren't here Thursday, so I'll do a little review too. We talked about some of the negative aspects of martyrdom. And, you know, that you might die, yes, right, things like that. But most importantly, that somehow servanthood in the church has been set up as martyrdom, hasn't it? That you're supposed to completely give your all, and once you do, then God loves you, and it doesn't matter what anybody else does anyway. And it's the kind of giving up of self, not of life, that completely, you know, leaves you with nothing at all. You're pointing out how using Romans 12, 1 and 2 as the text, that because of the gift of life that we have from God in Jesus, that God calls us into this constant renewal of self, as Paul puts it there, not to be conformed to the prevailing winds of the current age, but to be transformed in the renewal of our minds, so that ourselves and our emotions and all those things that are dear and special about each one of us are not just always given away, but rather are strengthened so that in our lives we can indeed give ourselves as servants, as God has called us to do. So today we're going to take a look at how that all gets played out a little bit. And we're using Galatians 6, 2 to 5. And if any of you were at first breakfast this morning, there had been some confusion about the titles of these Bible studies, and so we made a bit of a joke about it because I came in a day later than I was supposed to, so I got one less session this week than I was supposed to. And there were supposed to be three of these Bible studies on transforming the treasure, first on the self, then on relationships, and then on the church, and I threw in the universe. And that schedule had stayed on the thing, although the board had got changed and we had put it into relationships for today since there were only going to be two of these sessions. And so Carol announced the universe and I said, well, no, we're doing relationships, but we'll try and get to the universe. And then afterwards I was down in what I call the bowels of the hotel, you know, under the dining room there. And ran into Scott Hothrud, the new director, and he'd been at first breakfast. He said, are you really going to get to the universe? And I said, well, we're going to start with relationships with just one and two people, which is how God started anyway. So I think we might be able to. You all got that? It was funny. Okay. So we'll get this worked out here somehow. But it does start that way. And we all live together. We have our intimate relationships of marriage and family, and our intimate relationships of our friendships and extensions of those, and the communities we all live in terms of Christian people in our congregation. And in all those places, we're called to be present as the new and whole selves God has made for us. That's constantly renewed every day, that lives, you know, continually in the forgiveness. Remember on Thursday we talked about the difference between self-awareness and self-absorption. You know, that God's gift of whole self allows us to work out this way instead of drawing everything in this way. We talked about having my fault insurance. That's the Norwegian insurance, in case you didn't know that. And how we can draw, like we were talking about that just a bunch of you came in when the announcement was made at both breakfasts about, because I know I did this, I said I was okay because I've always gone to second lunch. But the announcement about lunchtime, you know, if more people could go to second lunch, and so at the beginning when a few people were in here, we figured everybody in the room said, I went to first lunch, it's my fault, so they'll all go, everybody will go to second, right? Except for all of you that have kids who know you're privileged to go to first lunch. And then you can feel guilty about that, that maybe you're keeping that place, you know, from. Anyway, it's real easy to do, isn't it? To just draw in everything into ourselves. And what God does in making ourselves whole is saying, no, I've got my issues, you've got your issues, but we all live together in community. And in the middle of that, we are called to be servants of one another out of our lives. And in Galatians 6, we are going to get to this. And this is a very, didn't believe that, huh? Anyway. It's not always a clear passage, so I promise you that we will get it totally cleared up by the end of this time. So starting in verse 2, Paul writes, "This bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks to be something, when in reality they are nothing, then they deceive themselves. But let each of you test your own work, and then your reason to boast will be in yourself alone and not in your neighbor. For each one has to bear their own load." Now, Paul sounds to be a bit contrary here. At the beginning, he says, bear one another's burdens. And at the end, he says, carry your own load. Which one is it going to be? If you're walking down the trail with a pack on your back and you meet somebody else who doesn't have it, what does the other person do? Say, have a good hike, or can I carry your pack? You know, Paul's not making it real clear here which one is up. Now, I suppose if the other person with the pack had a broken leg, it might be clear. Maybe not. Our tendency, I think, and particularly those of us who live in the United States, where individual hard work and independent thinking is extremely important to how we function, that we might let the person with a broken leg carry their own pack. No, I don't think it'd be good, builds character, right? No, it's not quite that bad. But I think we have taken this particular passage and had everyone carrying their own load being, well, you've got the job, you better do it, and no matter how you feel about it, it doesn't matter, does it, you know? I don't care if your entire family was just killed in a plane crash, you come to work. I mean, we have had those kinds of attitudes prevalent. I'm just reading. Does anybody know the novelist Reynolds Price? Oh, goody. You should know Reynolds Price. He's a wonderful novelist. He teaches English at Duke University and grew up in the South. Carol, you're looking puzzled. He wrote A Palpable God. You know that one? Palpable God is a collection of translations that he did of New Testament stories. That's fun. The novel I'm currently reading is called Good Hearts, which is a delightful story. It is a delightful story, but it's not a particularly nice situation that's going on. But at one point, a man has left his wife to go find himself, that kind of thing, and she's trying to find herself too. And at one point, she says that one of the problems her husband had faced in his life was that he had pulled up his own bootstraps so often that his mind got squished out his ears. That's true. Yeah, that happens a lot, doesn't it? When you say, you got to do your work, go out there, you know, pull up your own bootstraps and do it. Pretty soon, that's all you're doing, and you're not able to think. You're not able to feel, because that's not permitted, right? None of those things. And so when Paul's talking about some of these things, he's talking about that there's a balance between carrying your own load and having your burdens borne. And the distinction here is that each one of us, we've talked about being transformed selves because of the power of the gospel and the power of the Spirit in our lives, the continual renewal of that, as we talked about in Romans 12 yesterday. And each one of us has our own unique gifts, right? We're good about talking about that as Lutherans, right? Everybody's got their gifts. And everybody's gift is important. Now, I have gifts that other people don't have. And they're unique to me. So when there's a task for me to do that's based on my gifts, whose is it to do? It's mine. It's not anybody else's. It's mine to do. Now, there may be things, though, that block me from doing my task. I think about, particularly for me, because I'm one of the old ladies of the ELCA, one of the first women ordained 13 years ago, that because of that, and I hope it's also due to some skill on my part, but at least because they let me out of seminary early on, I have been invited to do lots of big events. You know, gotten to preach neat stuff, you know, and all those kinds of things. And, but, you know, it's sort of frightening to stand up in front of 4,000 people and preach, even if talking is your most favorite occupation. And I've been fortunate in all those times to have good support from friends and colleagues and things who were down there. You know, I call them my cheering section. I always make them sit where I can see them. Carol knows she's done that a couple times for me. And because I like to look at people when I preach, and it's nice to have a familiar face or two. But they didn't get up and preach the sermon for me. They took care of the anxiety and fear I had about doing that. Okay? Did that. But it wasn't theirs to do the task. They bore the burden. What's the burden that prevents the task? The anxiety and the fear. So I've got my friends out there that are saying, you can do it, fine. You don't need to be anxious about this. Have a little stage fright, that's good for you, but it's fine, right? And so the distinction we have to make is between doing the job and knowing what the burden is. Are you tracking with me on this?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, good. And that's it's kind of a hard one to do. And part of it is allowing then, giving each other permission and space and all that stuff to do those things we're gifted to do. And unfortunately, in the church, that doesn't happen very often. What do we say to people? Somebody comes up and says, I mean, this is sort of an old one, but we keep doing it. Somebody comes up and says, this is what I'm gifted to do. And you say, well, we don't have anybody doing that, so you can't do it. Right? Not helpful to that person. They'll end up doing something that they're not able to do and probably have more burdens than ability to do the task, which is not helpful. I heard a story at our Synod Assembly from Jerry Schmallenberger, who is the president of Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary. And I understand he's told this story at about 7 different Synod Assemblies, so maybe I remember. It was when he was in a parish and a policeman who was a member of his parish rescued, this is in Wisconsin or someplace, rescued a young man from drowning in an icy lake. So they were going to honor this member of their congregation. In order to make it better, he asked another member of the congregation who was also a police officer to read a lesson that day. And the guy was just scared spitless, absolutely scared spitless. But Schmallenberg, and he gave this as a bad thing on his own. He gave him, you know, pushed. And the guy finally did it, and Schmallenberger said he could see the guy's, you know, just shaking like a leaf. Behind, you know, could see his back, you know, and was almost ready to go and hold his legs down and do that. But he got through it and all that. And then they were done with the service. And afterwards, Dr. Schmallenberger said he heard the two police officers talking. And the one who read the lesson said to the other one, next time I'm taking my clothes off and jumping in the icy water and you're reading the lesson. I mean, that's putting somebody in a place they don't need to be. Both those police officers are better at taking off their clothes and jumping in the icy water to save a kid than they are at standing up in church and reading the scripture. But there are plenty of people sitting in that church who can read scripture gorgeously and beautifully. And so we need to be aware of what those tasks are, and you put an unnecessary burden on people as you do that. I want to give you another example of how this works, and this is one from my own experience here at Holden Village when I was pastor in this place. And I don't want to make this be the model of burden bearing for all of us, because I think it is a bit on the extreme side. Part of it has to do with, but becomes a wonderful example of exactly how this happens. Part of this comes from some conversation we were having over an English author called Charles Williams. Carol's back there, it's a bit boring, I bring it up. But Williams is a friend of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and Dorothy L. Sayers, and these people wrote at the same time. Do any of you know his weird novels?
Yep.
Weird, some of you know his strange and weird. These are great, it's great stuff, not to be read on dark and stormy nights, but they're very, very good. They're not really scary, they're just bizarre, but really good. And this one particularly has a whole chapter in it called The Doctrine of Substituted Love, which is what he talks about in terms of bearing one another's burdens, and which also has to do with Jesus on the cross and all that stuff. These are all available. This is from the Holden Village Library. All his novels, there are 7 of them, are in the Holden Village Library. And in this, he talks about the fact that, just what I've been saying, that each one of us has our own task, And it's not up to us to do jobs for somebody else, but rather, but with each task comes our particular burdens, right? And we can bear the burden. I can, if you're afraid of doing something, I can, in a sense, carry your fear. And I'm not going to be afraid because it's not my fear, right? And that's sort of what, like I said, my friends did for me in those events and preaching and stuff. And this had thing that happened at Holden Village here was in 1977-78, that winter. And there was one young, I was the village pastor here, by the way, then. And there was one young woman in the community who was extremely, had just a terrifically deep spiritual consciousness that she was actually very articulate about in very small groups, and a wonderful, wonderful way of talking about the gospel. And with I didn't really hound her, but I did keep encouraging her to consider doing Vespers one evening because I was hoping that the whole community could hear what she had to say. And she would always say, you know, Nancy, when I stand, she was very quiet and very shy, when I stand up in front of a group of people, first I start itching, then I get red, and then I break out into hives. She really had massive performance anxiety. And I just said, well, if it feels right sometime, do it. So we were talking about some of this burden-bearing stuff, and there was another young woman in the community who I don't think probably ever in her life has been afraid of anything, but also who was extremely connected in terms of her own spirituality and her own like spiritual awareness and consciousness. And they talked about this, and the shy young woman had decided she really did want to share some of her perspectives with the community in Vespers. And so she and this other woman got together and they prayed about it, and the stronger one said, well, stronger in terms of this kind of fear, I mean, the one who wasn't afraid of things, of performing or being in front of people, said, well, I'll take the burden of your fear. And the other one said, I'll also give it up. That's part of this, folks. If you're going to bear one another's burdens, the person with the burden has to be willing to give it up. That may be the hardest part for all of us. Right. So then I said, I'll give it up. And what happened was, and I know I was sitting next to the woman who took the burden during Vespers, and this was up, it was up in the dining hall, I still see it. And the minute the young woman started speaking, the woman who took the burden broke out into hives. And I'm sitting here going, and the minute she said amen, her hives were gone. And they didn't itch or worse, they weren't itchy or sore. They were just the big red welts on her skin. She'd never had hives in her life. You know, we were all just sort of going, no, Lutherans don't like that kind of thing. We don't like it at all. And you know, it makes you nervous. Anyway, but that's, now, not everyone is. As you all know, there are some people who, we all have different gifts of our own spirituality too, right? And there are people who are really gifted to pray and to be really intensely spiritual, to live in a kind of spiritual center and core that is a larger place in their lives maybe than it is for the rest of us. Does that make sense? We all know that. There are people gifted to pray and both of these women were those kind of women. But that allowed them then to be a model for how we can all be with each other in the world, too. I mean, we're not all going to break out into hives when we take somebody else's anxiety, because none of us can maybe be attached that easily. But we are able to, when we both give up our burdens and take another person's, to really be able to walk alongside one another in such a way that the tasks that we're gifted to do can be done. That ourselves can be honored that way also. Because if you get in, and some of you are parents, right? Which is more effective? To go in and clean your child's room yourself? Or to relax enough to give the child space in him or herself to do it? Which works best? depends on what you want done, right? If you're anxious about a clean house because you're having 12 people for dinner, that's one issue. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in a general way. I would bet that allowing the child the space and permission to figure out what they want their room to be like for themselves, and that fits in with how the community of your family functions, in the long run works better than going in there and picking up the stuff yourself and putting it in drawers you want it in, not in drawers they want it in, right? Maybe not, but I think in a general way it does. So there's all kinds of ways in which we can do, but the point is that we don't do each other's, don't do it for each other. There's another larger societal issue that I'll talk about here too. I said we're going to get into the universe a little bit, we can at least get into the world. That is how we as servants in the church offer help and are servants to those who really do stand in need. How many of you are in urban congregations? So you're doing a lot to help help folk that either come to the door or through programs that your congregation is either attached to or whatever it is, right? You do all kinds of those kinds of things. Generally, I think, I'm in a congregation like that. We run two transitional housing programs for the mentally ill and for homeless families. We're real connected with in strong partnership with a downtown parish, help out with their shelter and feeding program on a regular basis all year. And all these, plus the folks that come to the Think at Faith, there's a white mark on the, you know, yeah. Like the tramps used to do in the 30s. There are weeks like that. You say, where do these people come from? My parish is hard to find. It's sort of tucked away back there. And how did you get here? But sometimes I do say that. How did you get here? But I think all of us that have done that stuff know that although it takes more time, when you do have an opportunity to be in an ongoing relationship with somebody in need, it's always more important to unplug their need, which may be very immediate food and all that kind of stuff, from what the real issues are. And just be able to say to them, okay, here's your real situation that you need to look at, and here's your ability to take care of it, and here's what the burden is. And the burden and the task are not the same things always. Somebody that is right now hungry, you may feed them, but if they're unemployed and not housed and all that, the burden of not having food is going to be greater. Well, you got to help them find employment and do that stuff. Got to change the system so they can be employed. Minor things, you know. But those are all important things. And pulling those two things apart is important as we do work. As Lutherans, we've been pretty good about that, especially through the work of our international organizations, in that they have tended to do things like send ladybugs instead of food, look down the road, huh? Do all those good stuff in terms of letting people be themselves. Because when you start doing a task for somebody else, you might snatch away their self. And what we learned yesterday is that God does not want that to happen to us. So I'm just laying that stuff out now. Let's hear from you. Is this all fitting together here in whatever conglomeration is happening? It isn't solved here, I don't think. It worries me when people don't talk. Carol, see, she takes away my anxiety. She's my good friend.
I never seem to think of Charles Williams when I read this passage. So one of the interesting things that occurs to me every time this comes up in a Bible study that bear one another's burdens always turns out sounding like some kind of an ecclesiastical mad tea party where you just sort of, you know, you give me yours and I give you mine, and, you know, it sort of just exchanges all the way around. And what ends up then is that you bear a burden that you're a stranger to, or whatever. And so I think it's helpful to think, as you've done, about separating the task from the burden. What I think is more difficult is to, in the context of your own congregation, say, to to try to think about what burden you can bear, are able to bear, of someone else in the congregation that will be clear. I mean, it's one thing to have two people in a community, which is a wonderful example that you use from the village, who pray about this and are in a very interesting and probably a deeper relationship than most people in the congregation. But I wonder how that would work out. I mean, maybe some people here could share that. If it's, I was thinking in my own congregation that there's a woman who has a badly handicapped child, and she does not share a great deal of the burden of the hurt and the pain and all that about the child with us, and yet she herself is very vocal about the strength that she receives to do that task from the congregation.
Yeah, which is real key to hear that too. You may be bearing burdens in ways you're not aware of.
Yeah.
For those of you that were here Thursday, is the woman who was talking about the woman who didn't feel worthy to go to communion here? Do some of you remember that story? She was sitting over here the other day, I remember that. About when we were talking about some of that self, not being worthy. She was talking about a woman in her congregation. We were talking about how you might be able to take care of that when she said, I can't go to communion because there's awful things going on. And this woman was saying, you know, that's a lot of hooey because that's exactly when you're supposed to go to communion. And we didn't say it that way, but because you don't want to, you can't disparage somebody else's real feelings. I didn't mean that way. But the way we talked about her solving that was by saying, well, next time there's communion, saying, well, sometimes I feel that way too, but I still go to communion, and it's still because it's God's gift, and suggesting that she sit with that woman in church, and that they go together to communion, so that woman has the support of this other person. Sometimes bearing one another's burdens really is a physical presence. And that would help relieve the burden of that woman's anxiety about her worthiness in terms of receiving God's grace in Holy Communion. So there's lots of ways. And I bet if you stop and think about it, you'll see that there are lots of different times when you really have borne other people's burdens. And, believe it or not, when you have actually given up yours to somebody else. Yeah.
Well, what about the latter part of the statement, this phrase of fulfilling the law of Christ? The law of Christ.
The law of Christ in the book of Galatians is the freedom we have in the gospel and then the love we share because of that. You need to read the whole book of Galatians. We won't do that. You need to read the whole book of Galatians. You know, Paul's great treatise on Christian freedom, that is back in chapter 5, for freedom right at the beginning there. For freedom Christ has set us free. Do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. The slavery being the bondage of the law. The church at Galatia wanting to follow all the points of the law so that also their Christianity could be as pure as their Judaism. Yes, Dave. Right, and also honoring the gifts of others so that they're there. The downside of that verse, Jerry, is about the burden bearing. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't think of any time in my life when I have ever said this, pure and noble as I am. Unfortunately, I know that I have. That is, that somebody that, and this is a real, real quick trap for any of us in the helping professions, whether we're pastors or teachers or psychologists or addiction counselors or whatever it happens, nurses, doctors, that is, that when we have been carrying the burden for somebody else, and that person finally really acts out of themselves and does their task, what do we say? They never would have done it without me. That's the trap of the burden bearer, and that's the downside of that verse. No, that's not what you say at that point. You rejoice simply in the wonder of that person's gifts and point things to that for other folk too, not to yourself. That's some more self-absorption again. And then that also happens for you. You don't do it so that it happens for you. But allowing other people's gifts to shine, even if you bore their burdens, also then will allow you to see, as Jerry's saying, that your gifts also shine. you know, with God's light from the gospel in terms of your own actions. And you can see better what those are, right? Are we tracking here, Jerry, a little bit? Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing to do.
Nancy?
Yes.
Isn't it often the case that the person for whom you have borne a burden will turn to you and say, I never could have done it without you?
Yes.
And then you must accept that thanks that yes. they give, and you both have done what you were meant to do.
Exactly. And sometimes it's helpful at that point, Lee, I think, too, to say to that person, you did what was yours to do and I did what was mine to do. And there was a sharing there because we needed to. You did the task, I took the burden. And we can both rejoice in this.
And sometimes that acceptance of that is difficult for people, I think.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Very. You want to say, oh, no, I didn't do anything. Wrong, you did lots. To bear another person's burden is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful thing to be free to do what God calls you to do. That's a stunning event, folks, when you're allowed to do that. Yeah, Jerry.
You just reminded me of part of Luther's essay on the freedom of the Christian in that whole passage on being little Christ and being free to, and this is very dangerous, I think, you don't do it lightly, but to be free enough to discern our neighbor, our sister, our brother's need without all of the baggage of our own agendas and self-consciousness about that neighbor. So there's a sense of detachment, really, but also a real deep discernment.
Exactly. And that's the tricky part, which is why, for example, if you are a doctor and your husband is gravely ill, you cannot be your husband's doctor. If you are a pastor and there is a death in your family, mm-hmm. you cannot be pastor to your own family. If you are an addiction counselor and your teenage child has a drug addiction, you cannot be the counselor for that person because that detachment is impossible, right? And there are a lot of other examples you could give. I suppose, I don't know if an engineer could build a bridge for his mother-in-law. We'd have to think about that one. But that kind of, Jerry talked, that's an important part. So that's an important place where the Christian community comes in too. Because we do have intimate connections with one another, right? But they come with this kind of detachment that doesn't require, one, that we like each other. And two, allows us to be able to share our lives in this wonderful way. That doesn't mean you have to live with our lives all the time. It makes a big difference.
Does that mean that a father is a lousy counselor to his own kids?
Not necessarily, but he's father. It comes in terms of being parent-child, which is wonderful counsel. You know, when that relationship is good and the nurture there is wonderful, that's probably the best counsel there is. But, you know, when there's real specific need for professional help, which can happen in any kind of circumstance, usually the parent, or it might be the child to the parent, too, if not the person to provide that, because they'll be too engaged with their own part in that relationship. No, I'm just saying it's different than the nurturing relationship between parent and child. One other thing I was thinking about too is we need to think about this isn't, and it was mentioned a little bit about how we, Carol was talking about the negative side of that, where you just sort of pass burdens along the row. But this is, it can also be a very strong sharing thing, can be and also is involved in our intimate relationships. When people are married, I have, I'm not married, but I observe this, especially when I've been married a long time. I'm going to lots of 50th wedding anniversaries this year, which is kind of fun. 1939 was a big year. I mean, my word. You know, all kinds of folk got married in 1939. And I think one thing that is true about a long marriage, I've noticed, is that this kind of burden-bearing goes on in that intimate connection as well. Because in a good marriage, who knows the burdens of the spouse better than the other spouse? Probably down the road, you know very well that when that spouse is going into a particular situation, you know exactly what's going to happen. I'm sorry, folks, we do are renewed and changed, but we also have the same besetting sins that we continually get forgiveness for, right? And most of us, in the people that we know well, know very well when they're going to do a particular thing, we're just going, oh boy. We know what's coming here. And you talk to the person and say, and it gets better, I would guess, as you get older too, and you say, yeah, I know what I'm going to do, so here, you take it, and I'll just do it. But that kind of sharing goes on, and it might be, you know very well they're going to fall into some sort of idiocy or other. And they go ahead, and I had about three couples in the staff Bible study who were hysterical at this, so I must have hit a chord. And you know what's going to happen, but that kind of intimate knowledge of that is a burden bearing, isn't it? Because really, even though you might laugh about it, sometimes it's not funny. Sometimes there's stuff that people continue to do that is not funny and that you just have to live with. But being able to share that burden with that other person, and the other person knowing that when they do this task where they know they're probably going to fall into the same kind of traps they've fallen in all their lives, the fact that other person knows it intimately makes it easier to do, I would think. So there's that kind of sharing of the burden too. Yeah.
There's a lot of people having a lot of problems sharing burden, mm-hmm. burdens, in, and that's why there's such a divorce rate.
Yeah, exactly. I think so. And being willing to accept the fact that the other person has burdens.
That's kind of I don't usually use...
Or that I do.
I don't usually use athletic imagery, but it seems to me that...
You probably should, Carol. Your congregation might grow, you know?
I have a lot of 80-year-old women. They don't really, tune in on basketball either. But it seems to me that if you ever go to any athletic events, there's a sense in which this kind of burden-bearing is a kind of a cover for the weakness of the other. I mean, you know which teammate has a certain strength and which doesn't. And you even see that in certain kinds of athletic events where somebody's about ready to blow and the teammates come and restrain. But I wonder if that isn't the way it is within friendships and families, that you kind of cover for the weakness of the other, and that is a sense in which you're bearing the burden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as you don't cover for the weak, as long as it's not dysfunctional, enabling, like in codependency and stuff like that. You can all go to Jackie's session at 6:50 tonight. And learn about how all this works negatively. We're talking about the positive side of it now.
A healthy cover as opposed to a dysfunctional cover.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, out of the Bible here, this is a positive way to live together. We do need one another. That's fact. We do not live alone. The gospel calls us into relationship with one another. It doesn't matter what your household looks like. That God does not require marriage and family in order to be saved. This may be news to the church and the world, but it's not. And at least I hope so. No. It's not. And so we're called into this kind of relationship with one another, where that gets then acted out in all different ways. It gets acted out in marriage and family. It gets acted out among single people in their own hospitality, in their own homes. It gets acted out in every variety of relationship that's present in the community. And we're called then to bear each other's burdens at whatever level we can do that. And to also help one another separate out what's the task and what's the burden, which is often really confusing, isn't it? You know, if you get something you have to do, or if you're a student and you're finishing a term paper, and you just can't get it done, it's not working and all this stuff, and you go to somebody and you say, I'm all worked up, but I'm so anxious, and I'm having fits, I can't get the thing done, I've got this pile of crumpled paper on the floor, you know, it's up to here, keep tearing stuff out of the typewriter. Well, I suppose people keep clearing their computer screens now, don't they? Yeah, right. I have nothing on the screen. What am I going to do? And a good friend or somebody that hears that right will say, get a good night's sleep. Take a break, you know. Do something to get rid of your anxiety about it. Then come back with a clear mind and a clear computer screen and start over. If the anxiety, the burden's too strong, you might want to suggest they, you know, get some help with that because it may be blocking the other things. But that's the kind of thing we're about as Christian people, also, you know, pulling all that apart.
Just a comment.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about bearing each other's burdens, I just think about that in terms of an emotional sense versus a physical sense. And part of that comes from a study that I did on caregiving with elderly people caring for their spouse at home. And what kept ringing through, the theme for them was that they really valued the emotional support from each other or from within. Sometimes that spirituality within kept them going.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the physical support that they needed as much. And that came through over and over and over. And that was really very interesting for me to hear. Because as a nurse, we're always trying to put in extra services or what can I do for you? And that wasn't always the case. That wasn't what they primarily needed. So that makes me, these verses make me think of that.
It is, that's exactly right. And what do we want to do? We want to get in there and make sure they've got the right kind of hardware in their bathrooms, and make sure they're getting Meals on Wheels, you know, and make sure they've got their little medic panic button around their necks, right? And then it's all taken care of, isn't it? No, of course it's not. Heavens. That's not the burden at all. I mean, it's a burden. I mean, not the task, but whatever. I'm getting confused. But, you know, no, that's, you're exactly right. I mean, what they need is real connections with folk that allow them to know and sustain what they already know is present within them and to do that. You know, your need for intimate connection does not change when you hit 67 and a half or whatever. Right? All of you that are above that, I know there are probably some in here. Yeah.
Is there a time when it's legitimate to say to someone, I'm sorry, I cannot take that burden?
Yes. Very definitely. And I would, don't take it if you can't. I think sometimes some people ask us to, you have to help by saying, sometimes you need to say to people, no, you're not asking me to carry your burden, you're asking me to do your task. Which might sometimes be the case.
Yeah. This crops up a lot with the kids at LDI because using your example of being real hyper about papers, and one little gal that we had is the kind who's real easy to talk to, and people would go flocking to her, and she was getting way behind in her schoolwork, and she needed to learn to say, no, I cannot drop what I'm doing in the library to go take a walk with you right now, and listen to you unburden your anxiety. And that was very hard for her to do.
Also, when the community sees that, I think it behooves the community to spread out. It's like the story of Moses, you know, in the wilderness, when all the folk had been laying their burdens on him so much that he said to God, you do something about this or kill me, you know, I've had it. Preferably kill me. That was his preference. Take me. I'm done. You know, and what does God do? Remember, what did God do? Oh, come on, you guys know that story?
Spread out the
70 elders, and what did they do? What did God do?
Spread out.
What did God spread out?
He had certain people take certain areas.
No, real key thing, what did God spread out over the 70 elders?
Holy Spirit.
Exactly, the Spirit. The same Spirit that God had given Moses got distributed to 70 other people. Then there were old Eldad and me dad back there who didn't come to the right meeting. It's such a great institutional story, you know. So Aaron and Miriam and the others are really kicked off, aren't they? Because Eldad and Medad got the spirit even though they didn't come to the meeting. You know?
Not fair.
Not fair. That's right. God's not supposed to work that way. God only works in meetings. Let's hear it for Eldad and Medad. They're out there bearing the burdens with the spirit, folks, whether or not they happen to come to the right meeting. And we also have to acknowledge that. And that's the way it happens. And sometimes with people like the young woman you're talking about, we need to pay attention to the fact, because what does, now that was one action in the Old Testament. Now what about the Christian church? On whom is the Spirit of God? 70 white male elders? Every one of us, you know, and it's the same Spirit. So who has the gift to bear burdens? That's right. Who's got the strength to do it? You're really reluctant to say that. But we all do. And who's got the gift to do tasks? All of us, right? And also then, we've got the same freedom, this law of Christ here, stuff in Galatians, to give up our burdens to other folks. And to watch out for, like, that young woman, the ones that are really gifted. They're like, you know, I don't know, I love Star Trek. Anybody else love Star Trek? And we have people who are like, you know what, has anybody seen enough Star Trek to know what an empath is? They show up from time to time, and they're special beings that can totally feel it's from the word empathy, of course, every pain and joy and everything in another person. And we have people in our communities that are like that a little bit. And people do flock to them. And I think you have to watch out for that.
More sensitive, yeah, to others.
Exactly. They're just real open and ready to take that. You have to watch them.